Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey, good evening, everybody. John Henry Soto here. Welcome to Counterparts. As always, I'm here with George Batista. He's either on this side or that side, wherever he wants to hang out today. Today, we have Rob Wiley. He's going to be on the show, filmmaker. He's got a new film, which actually is mañana, is actually going to be on Apple TV. So we're very excited to talk to him. And he's also a musician. So please listen to this little jazz. And when we come back, we're going to have some rock and roll fun. All right. So we are back. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. Appreciate y'all. So I say y'all now. It's like I'm a Puerto Rican from the Bronx. I don't know what I'm doing.
I don't know. What happened to you, man?
I have no idea, but my kids even do it now. They're like, y'all, dad, y'all. Like I said, Rob Wiley is going to be on the show. George, before we talk about Rob, please give us a little love from our sponsor.
Absolutely. The Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Go to myvitaminresource.com. And if you enter the promo code Counterparts, you will get free shipping on all orders. So check it out.
Sweet.
All right.
I have a graphic there. I apologize to. I have a graphic that I'm supposed to show, but I, for some reason, it's not here, and I'll get it again for our sponsor. So I apologize, sponsors. We love you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about our guests. So first of all, Rob Wiley. He is a feature film and music video director from Victoria, British Columbia. Rob sang and played guitar in rock bands for years, where he first started directing music videos to promote their songs. His music video, Out of Your Head, won Best Video at the 2012 Vancouver Island Music Awards, and Rob soon became regarded as one of the top up-and-coming music video directors in Canada. In 2016, Rob wrote and directed his first full-length feature film, Dark Cove, a thriller which went on to receive critical acclaim iHorror.com, calling the movie an incredibly strikingly unique psychological thriller. His latest film is called River Road, about a musician who starts an intense romance with a fun-loving, hard-parting young woman. They soon spiral downward into a world of heroin and crime. River Road will be out on Apple TV tomorrow, August 3rd, and you should definitely check that film out. So without further ado, let's bring him up, Mr. Rob Wiley.
Yes. Right on, rock and roll.
What's going on, guys?
Good. Everything's going good. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us this evening and talk some film, some music, and some pleasant young ladies that you meet on the road.
Wow. I'm Henry Soto. You're getting down to it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all of it. But yeah, this was great. First thing I want to ask, and you know, when you're writing something like this, because you wrote and directed this, and this is one of those, I would think, challenging kind of, endeavors, because you are a musician, you are a filmmaker, you shoot music videos, so you have a lot of different stylistic ways of shooting, but you're also behind the guitar and the mic, you're also a performer, so you're kind of coming from a lot of different angles, you know, as a filmmaker. What was the biggest challenge for you to kind of take on all those roles and kind of put it into one as director? Because now director, now you got to be critical of everything and kind of make sure everything is actually in place, as well as being performing in it, music and everything. What was that like?
Well, I mean, definitely because I started doing music videos for my own bands, you know what I mean? That's literally how I started my first directing stuff, doing that. So actually, I mean, and then my first movie, I had a pretty big acting role, and that's tough being a performer and the behind the scenes director and all that. It gets a little wild, I'm not gonna lie. So like this, as you guys saw in this movie in River Road, I've relegated myself to cameo status. Right. I mean, a couple quick scenes. Yeah. So therefore, I mean, literally, you know, the music is, you know, done separately in post and everything. So literally I'm just there doing the behind the scenes, directing the film and kind of taking off the performer hat more, bringing in the, you know, trying to help the performers in the movie, encourage them, trying to help them, you know, be the best they could be and trying to tell the story. So I kind of have to put away the singer performer part, and that's great. I like doing that. And then I also like going back on stage and doing that whole thing. But
And the interesting part was also the fact that you played a, I guess I would say a smaller role. So, but you're actually playing a bigger role, storytelling. So, because in a, with a music video, you have the, you know, the 3 minutes and 22 seconds, the music that you have to kind of tell a story. So the arc is a little bit different. With this, you have a little bit more of a canvas. You have to be very, very, you know. So was there any time where you had to tell an actor, because this is a longer piece, like, no, you're, this is not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something. Did you have to get tough on set?
I mean, with actors, there's a couple of heated moments when it's like, there's a couple of days when things are like really intense when, you know, we're trying to, it's such a low budget indie film and we're just trying to pack so many things in, you know, there's a couple of days, there's a couple moments when we're just all up in it, but not, and for the most part, I'm pretty good at, you know, just being like, yeah, if I really need to push something through, I can usually explain where I'm coming from pretty quick. Yeah. And I'm pretty, you know, I do get fired up. I do get intense, but it's pretty like logical and reasonable, I think. Right. Of some, occasionally there's things that people are like, whoa, 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 but this, I'm like, no, no, no. Okay. We're just doing it this way. You kind of have to say, you do have to say, trust me a lot, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's absolutely true.
Trust me. It'll work out.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And yeah. So, but for the most part, it, you know, as long as everyone's on the same page, is trying to just make the movie the best it could be, for the most part, you're going to have a few little, some friction is actually kind of good sometimes.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah.
You know, if everyone's just having so much fun and all this, it's like, are you really focused? Are you
right? Then it's a surfer movie from the 60s. And it's a beach, you know, the Beach Boys. It's like, I mean, it's fun.
It's fun.
But this is, you know, we're doing something here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it does get a little wild. You know, it's on this budget, you got to get a lot done on certain days, and things get intense. But we made it through, and here we are. It's finally coming out. So.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, you know, because you're dealing with tough subject matter in this film. I mean, it's really intense, you know, and you're showing, like, and John, we talked about this a little bit before the show started. You show this progression of this person who's going through this, you know, the addiction and what it really does to you. Like, I'm, you know, writing this, was this, you know, how did you, like, you know, deal with those concepts, you know, for you mentally? Was it something you had dealt with before? Was it somebody you knew? Was it just, you know, how did you come up with those concepts?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost two separate factions in a way, how I look at it, which is the reality, like the realness of it, which is, you know, you guys are musicians, you come from the world, but let's just say, my best friend, my drummer, it was a whole, you know, the whole ride, man. Whole ride from being 17 and drinking all the way to being doing crack in my basement. And chick is wild. So seeing that, my brother, you know, I've got other people, actually a lot of people, no heroin though, and that's the separation. It was more at the time, crack was really big. It was more coke and alcohol. Okay. And then what happened was I don't know if you know it. If you're from the Vancouver area, crack was really, it was like a huge, huge thing here, especially in Vancouver and the East Hastings, kind of Skid Row. Mm-hmm. So what happened a lot of the times was, you know, guys in their 20s, they're drunk, they want blow, they go downtown, they try to get some blow, and then they're like, no, all we got is crack, and then they end up starting it and kind of going down that road. Anyway, that's one. So that's the realness, right?
Right.
And then the other way of looking at it is from a cinematic perspective,
yeah,
which is why, and from more like, you know, we've all read all this, you know, all the heroin, or seen the documentaries of the rock stars over the years. You know how big it is. It's like tapping into that history.
Yeah.
You know, right. The Clapton, and you know, there's so many, you know, obviously the grunge artists and everything, tapping in that. And cinematically, you know, it is kind of, you're getting into Requiem for a Dream, you're getting into Trainspotting. So it's a stylistic approach. And I'll be honest, you know, heroin, a part of the reason I chose it was to apply to be able to kind of have that dreamlike, you know, like the montages with the music montages, mm-hmm. downtown, mm-hmm. there's the lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of, it does tap into my strengths from music videos, you know, having the slow motion and just having it to music. So there's two kind of factions, which is, yeah, we're doing stylistic cinema, you know. And so in that way, you could kind of separate yourself because you're like, oh, it's kind of cool, blah, 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 blah. But then also, myself and even Cody Kearsley, and I didn't know this at the time I cast him, he told me kind of in the middle, you know, he's pretty open about it now. You know, he's had experience with addiction himself. So, you know, not again.
Yeah, yeah.
But so again, in a way you could kind of, so you have the reality, you have the experiences, and you do, I did use a lot of that stuff in, you know, the darkness of it. And then, but you're always mining little things from your own lives, you know, and relationship stuff. There's all sorts of stuff in
there
that you mine. But then there's also the, you know, the stuff that you make up, and that's more for cinematic, more to entertain. And you kind of blend them so you don't really know. So hopefully the audience doesn't really know which is which, and just kind of goes for it. I don't know. Does that make sense? Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, the fascinating part is also the relationship in it, because it's such a casual decline. You know, it's not, it's, and that's what happens in that world, you know, and you know, you don't hear about it till later on, like a, you know, a musician can't get on stage, you know, can't do a show. Why? Well, he can't get up. And when did that happen? Well, no, it's been going on, but he's been dealing with it, and we've been kind of like helping with it. But, you know, I also found interesting, and I don't know if this is something that you intentionally did, but when you had, there wasn't a lot of intervention. You know what I mean? Like everyone's kind of like, and that's really real life.
that's the thing.
That's totally real life. Everybody's just doing their thing. Nobody just thinks that this dude is going down this road.
Yeah.
He's with this nice girl. They seem to be in love. Everything is fine, but they're like losing it.
But that's the thing, because that's interesting. No one's brought that up before, but it's true, because that's the reality is you can hide away.
Yeah,
you can do it
a little bit.
Right. I mean, up to a certain point, you could you know, brush people off, and then they don't really know what's going on. They know something's up, but they don't know how serious it is. And that was the same thing with my drummer. Was his family knew he was bad, but they didn't know how bad it was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Until shit hits the fan. And then people realized, you know, but it's like, and the intervention part, because you could fake it to a certain point, and you could, and then people also don't know what to do to help your friends. Now it seems like it's a little bit clear, but like even, you know, 10 years ago, I don't know, man, people don't know what to do. I didn't, you know, you're just kind of figuring it out. I just kind of had to figure it out to how to help, try and help people. It's still a mystery because everyone's different,
right? And the scene in the studio was a perfect example of that, because he like throws up, and I don't want to give away the story.
Yeah, you can give away the studio. Yeah, he's not in good shape.
He's not And but you were trying to ask him, what, you got, are you sick? You know.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I just, he goes, yeah, I'm fine. And then you kind of brought up that scene, you know, the what it might be, and then you're like, no, I was just kidding. And that's like so legitimately what would happen.
Yeah,
somebody would say it and then be like, no, I'm just messing with you. It's all good.
Yeah. Because it's all good. And that's the thing, is it's like that's very real. And very much, you know, I was kind of like fucking with myself on that, playing with myself too, because I'm kind of like that. Sometimes you see, you know, you joke around, and it also shows the passiveness kind of in rock bands. You're it's a little bit passive, and it's a party culture. Right. And so like, what line are they at? Yeah. Are they just burnt out because they had a bad week and they party too much, or is it serious? And you're just kind of like, oh, you know, get some rest.
Yeah. I partied. I partied too. And I got rest.
Yeah.
I drank some Tang. Took some vitamin C and everything's fine, you know.
But
unfortunately, that doesn't. So this is actually tomorrow, Apple TV premiere. So that's exciting. Did you have a deadline to get it to Apple? Because and did you shoot this during the pandemic?
It's been longer. So it actually right before we finished. Luckily, we finished it before, and we were post. And then, definitely went on hold for a bit. To be honest, in a weird way, we've had to hang on to it for, you know, a lot longer than we thought we were going to be before we could release it. To be honest, it probably helped because I was able to tweak, just more tweaking. And we had screenings right before, before we had a quick screening, and then we had screenings in the fall. We had a little bit of a theatrical release at some spots in the States and up here. So yeah, and then was just able to tweak and grind out the post-production. So and then we were planning, you know, it always gets pushed back a little bit. We were planning the spring.
Oh yeah.
You know how it is. But hey, it's happening now. But yeah, it was definitely a grind. But hey, you know, it all kind of worked out, I think, in a strange way. But then there's also stuff too. There's all the figuring out the distribution and all the indie film fun stuff. Sales agents and all that shenanigans. But that was kind of going on during the pandemic. And then at the same time, I was able to just keep editing it. So I think it's the best it could have been.
Yeah. I think also that, and I don't know how you feel about it, but the pandemic sort of... I edited a film during the pandemic. I had a short film, and I had it all kind of shot already, but I didn't, you know, and then the world shut down. So then I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll sit down here and edit. And it was the most relaxful editing that I could have done, because I literally have two kids, so they're kind of running around and stuff, but I was still pretty relaxed. So it was sort of like I don't want to say that the pandemic was a nice thing. But stopping, the taking a breath, being able to really focus on what you're doing, and know that you don't have to end at a certain time because you got to get to the next morning, you got to do this and that. And it just gave a little bit more of a relaxation. Did you kind of feel that as well during that process?
100%, because I was able to take my time and just experiment with, like, even just the title. So it sounds so simple, and people who maybe don't, you know, make films would be like, you spent weeks just doing the font, like trying to figure out what font to use and shit. And then, like, literally, I'm not kidding. I literally go through After Effects templates, you know, and you download them, just trying this one, and then you finally get the one, and then you have to tweak. So, so I was able to just calm everything down, take the time, and do those details. And then it ends up being a lot better. I think it worked out better for me because I'm not a master titler, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
it sounds ridiculous. Anyways, weeks on just the title sequence sounds so ridiculous, but
it's so true though. You know, it's so legitimate because it's like there was one thing I was shooting once, and it was a voiceover, and I had two girls that had to have a voiceover on a phone. So a guy is talking, he's walking, and he's getting two phone calls. So one of them is a girl calling him, his girlfriend, and then he hangs up, and then another girl calls. So I had two friends of mine, you know, do audios for me. One is in LA, the other one's up somewhere. They sent it to me. I put them in. They both sounded like the same person. I'm like, what the hell? I didn't notice that when I knew them, when I was in person with them. I didn't notice it. So now I'm going back and forth trying to tweak voices. Like,
oh,
I had him like, "Hi, this is Michelle." that ain't right. Like, it's totally but you spent, I spent like, I think 2 weeks just trying to figure out what I would get somebody else and then make them feel bad because they can, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's so funny.
I want to.
No, I'm sorry, George. I'm gonna let you talk, George.
Yeah, thanks, John. Actually, I wanted to kind of go back for a second. Just when you were growing up, was it strictly music? Were you a film buff growing up, or was it all music? Or, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
It was pretty comboed. Yeah, it was both. Yeah, my mom's a piano teacher.
Oh, okay.
And then my dad was a writer and like a music fan. He wasn't really a musician, but a writer. But his side of the family is pretty film buffy.
Mm.
Pretty film buffy for sure. So we started, you know, by the time, you know, like 14, 15, getting into the Kubrick, and I had that like a little almanac that had all the Academy Award, list of all the Academy Award, you know, the main winners. So you kind of go and you'd be like, oh, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Boom, let's watch that. And yeah, it was getting pretty film buffy by the time around then. And then also playing in bands pretty early, you know, around, we were jamming around 12 and stuff. But, you know, same time, I guess it's kind of the same around 14, 15. When you start. In bands and then being film buffy. But then I did kind of, you know, definitely focused on, it was kind of a dream. Oh, I'll do that when I'm a bit older, the filmmaking, because it was definitely band oriented, you know, in my late teens, early 20s. But then I started gradually doing the music videos and then really getting into it.
Yeah.
The filmmaking.
I was going to say there was a couple of sequences that you can, that, oh, by the way, I love the fact that you had a chase scene. Which is like,
yeah.
I was like, man, we need chasing, like real ones.
Yeah.
I mean, not talking about Marvel.
Realistic stuff. Yeah. Right? Realistic
stuff, you know? And I thought, wow, this is so freaking cool. And it was, and you can see your editing skill and your shooting skills.
Oh, thanks.
Because the music video, it has to be, you know, it has to snap. You have to, like 3 or 4 seconds to switch. But you really captured that chase scene. It was really, really impressive. Was that something that you had mapped out at the beginning, or was that something that you kind of thought of as you were shooting?
Well, as far as like, I knew I wanted to, and like, I don't know what you guys thought, but maybe, yeah, the movie, I don't want to give away too much, but it definitely, in that final act, it kind of takes its turn into that world.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to give away.
So but hopefully it's a bit of a surprise where you're just kind of like, oh shit, they're actually going to do that? Oh,
exactly.
Maybe that's how you guys felt. I don't know. But then definitely, I mean, I knew, when it comes to actual shot by shot stuff, it was like that chase scene. We went back to that location like 4 or 5 times and did pickups. So everything's done on a different day, all the car stuff. But yeah, I definitely kind of, you know, watch some chase sequences and say, okay, I want the shot of the tire, you know, almost like GoPro style, right? Mm-hmm. But then like, how do I get that? I just like leaned out the window of the car, put the camera there. And then we had a drone operator just for a day, my friend. So we got some drone shots. And then I was in the van, right? Just shooting out the passenger window, like beside my roommate who was actually driving the motorcycle, the stunt double.
Oh, cool.
You get shots there, get them, and then shoot out the back of it, getting shots of the motorcycle coming at you, like all the angles. Then we needed one angle, we needed left, which is I wanted the camera to be like a foot off the ground, really low, following very fast behind the motorcycle. And we're like, I don't know how to get that shot. Like, we don't have a camera car.
Duct tape yourself to the front.
Actually, you're almost exactly right, except we duct tape. I'm not even kidding you. We're going to release a video next week, I think, of it. But no, we duct taped and we gaffer taped and like bungee corded a plank, a wooden plank.
Oh, yeah.
Laid it on the front of, you know, my roommate's just little like Honda. And then at the end, you know, we use the plank for a lot of stuff. So we're able to attach the camera. So we just bungee corded it and I'm not even kidding. It's ridiculous. Like, it looks so ridiculous. Bungee tape it. So it's literally just laying over the windshield, laying down. The camera's at the end. And then we just drove beyond the motorcycle and got the shot. So you kind of just have to like,
yeah,
sort it out. But
isn't that like the whole joy of it? You know what I mean? It's trying to figure it out, you know, because I watch like, you know, Orson Welles talk about like Citizen Kane. And, you know, there was that long shot, you know, where he gets the guy on the phone that's all the way in the at the end. Yeah. Well, they couldn't get the camera low enough. So he just dug a hole in the actual house. They dug into it and they put the camera in a hole so they can shoot up. And now this wasn't like you don't learn that in film school. I mean, obviously this was before film school was a thing, but you try to figure out, you know, and then you get the shot and you're like, oh, that looks good.
Well, it's good if it works out.
Right.
If, it works out, yeah. If the camera fell off and broke and all that, it wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, no.
I like that Orson Welles story. And again, I think that's why part of the reason why it's so revered by film fans is Orson. Well, again, so I think Greg Tolan, the cinematographer? I might have messed up his name, but
I think that's him. Yeah.
You know, part of the reason why he was pumped to work with Orson. It's because Orson didn't know anything about film. He was like a theater director. He's like, I want this kind of lighting. I want this. And the DP's like, yeah, we're going to do some original stuff. Because back then, the DP was working in a strict system too. So he was pumped to branch out and to experiment with what Orson was doing. And he was loving it. He's like, yeah, Orson, what do you want to do? It's like, let's dig a hole in the floor. Let's do it. Yeah.
And there's also the story with Alfred Hitchcock where – you know, he used for Psycho, he used his film, you know, he was doing television a lot. He used his television crew to shoot Psycho. Yeah. And the scene, you know, the famous bathroom shower scene, there were 75 cuts in that scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, 75, you know what I mean? So if you can imagine being, you know, the editor excited, like, what the hell is this guy doing? But I'm excited because this is like so weird and so different, you know, because back then it was very, like you said, it was very formula.
Yeah.
There was a, you know, a studio system that you went into and you learned how to do it the way the studios did it. And then here comes these crazy geniuses doing their own thing. So I love that. I love that. But the George, I'll give you.
No, I was just actually I was going to kind of piggyback on some of the stuff that you guys were talking about. The amount of detail that you guys have to deal with when you're doing these films, the things that I would, you know, as a person, I've never done a film or anything like that. So I, you know, I went on a tour when I was in LA. I did the Paramount tour, and they have this picture, and it was a picture of, it was a scene from the Ten Commandments, and they had the horses now. It's the photographer shooting the photographer who's shooting the horses. So you see the truck and you see the guys in the back of the truck with the, you know, shooting the horses coming this way, right? So it's, the film is of the car in front of the horses. And as the horses are riding the cars, you know, the horses are following the car.
Yeah.
So there's two planks at the end of the car on each side like this. And the guy tells me, you know what those planks are for? Had no clue. He goes, well, how do you think they're going to cover up the tire tracks?
And
I'm like, holy cow. I didn't even think about it because these two little planks that are rubbing against the sand that are covering up the tire tracks as the horses are coming. And
that's dope. Wow. True.
I had no clue. Holy. So, yeah, and it made me think, holy cow, what these guys have to think of when they're doing these films. You know?
And the thing is, you can be creative like that, but you also have to storytell, right? And that's the genius of how these guys did it. You know, they were able to take all these weird ideas and really be able to tell a good narrative, you know, without confusing people and be like, why is there planks?
Right, exactly.
But I mean, going back to the Psycho thing, I mean, we just mentioned a bit. I mean, turned out to be maybe the most famous scene of all time. One of them, the top five.
Definitely is top five
of all time, 100%.
I would think so.
Yeah. Everyone knows like the and the music too, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's like iconic, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but he was another. Of course, he didn't really like actors, so that was another. he said making movies. I think he said once, like, making movies would be great if it wasn't for the actors or something.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, but I think he was pretty much like, he's like, this is my shot.
The vision, yeah. And these are the pawns that I need to get this story told. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to talk. You know, so he's kind of that kind of a character, but you know, but he was a genius. I wanted to actually ask you a little bit about the music part of it. You've directed a lot of music videos as well, and won awards. What when you're working with a band? Oh God,
working with a band.
just having been in a band, I just think it's like, I can't imagine shooting. But I've done two music videos in my day, and they were like very simple music videos. Yeah. How was that process for you working with bands, knowing what you know, having been a musician, being on stage, you know what you got to get, you know you got to get them to do. Some musicians are really kind of like not going to be cooperative. Some of them, not all of them, just some of them. How did you deal with that?
Oh, wait, so are we just talking about like music, doing music videos and dealing with bands?
Yeah, like bands. Yeah.
I mean, most of the bands that I worked with are pretty pumped, or at least there's usually like the one kind of, you know, lead guy who's like pumped.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, we're gonna shoot.
And usually it's very collaborative when I'm doing someone else's music videos. Usually they have a pretty strong idea, and you know, and then occasionally there's like, you know, the bass player who's just kind of chilling in the back, you know. But ways of going, because that's the thing, you kind of learn little tricks. Like you shoot the bass really close just on his fingers and you cut that in. There's like kind of ways of doing it if people aren't like, I like to do a lot of takes. So classic thing would be like, I remember doing one music video where I'm sitting in a wheelchair with the camera, and then my friend is just like going back and forth and like diagonally and going in. So you just shoot tons of material, and then all you need is a couple seconds of the bass player being not being self-conscious. You know, I'm picking on bass players.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
You just go through the footage, and sometimes you're like, and then you find it when the drummer's just looking cool, and then you're like,
yeah,
gotcha.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. And drummers, George is a drummer, so it's always harder for them because they're always in the back. I have footage, you know, of George. George is usually like this in my pictures.
Yeah, you just see my face pretty much because I'm
you know, he's covered by like by everything. So that's also a good time for the drummer to give him some love, you know.
Yeah, you cut to the drummer always on the crash cymbal.
Exactly. right. Absolutely.
I love that. So on your film, when the early days of starting this process, when did you know you were ready to start shooting? That's always been like a thing for like, you know, you kind of got the script and now you're like.
We weren't ready at all.
Yeah. I mean, actually, honestly, is anyone really say they're ready? You know, you pick a date and then you shoot for it.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple stages. There was a false start, I believe. You know, it was, we knew we needed some of the weather because the weather turns pretty intense on the rain factor in the fall. So, at first we were trying to shoot in the summer, and that we had an actor drop out, and it was actually ended up working out for the best because we had to kind of re-examine things, and we shot in the fall and then in September, and we were like, and that was the thing. We weren't really ready, but we're like, listen, we got to shoot September before the rain. The October rain is like for real, especially in Vancouver. It's savagery. So then we're like, we're just doing it. And actually, Cody wasn't cast as the lead actor. He was not cast until a week before filming.
Wow.
What?
Holy cow. We had two other actors. You know, things happen in their lives, and two actors dropped out. it all ended up working out because he was ready to go. He's like, he was on Riverdale, but he's like, I'm off for the next month. And he's like, I want to do the project. And we set that up. So to answer your question, yeah, we weren't ready, but you know, we had a little bit more time in that second time we started back up. But here's what happened. Usually the first week of September out here, really nice. I'm talking summer continued. Like, it's gorgeous. That first week, we got the weather prediction, and it was 10 days of rain. and in early September, and we're like, oh my God. So then we rushed to start. Like, there was like a day of sun before that. We rushed to start, and then we planned all the interiors. And then there's a couple of the scenes that were kind of rainy. It actually ended up working out. I was just, maybe I was being a little bit like, I need sun. I want, like, because I like to play with the sun, lens flares and stuff.
Yeah. I think also shooting in the gray is also really nice too, though, especially it fit really well, because I did notice there were rain shots. You know, there were days where you can see that it had rained, but it kind of almost makes sense with this storytelling too. Yeah. You know, it kind of really fits in. So that's actually good. Isn't it? I mean, I guess there's a reason why freaking Hollywood is in LA, right? Because
exactly. Because then if they want rain, they just bust out the rain machines.
You know? They like don't even drink water over there. I don't even know what's going on. They're like all dried up.
I'm just curious, as far as, you know, when you're working with actors, how much autonomy do they have as far as, like, you know, do they come up with suggestions, or is it, you know, how does that work with them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty collaborative with it. I'm pretty loose with it. I mean, and that's the thing, especially with Lexi and Cody, the two leads, they're awesome, because they were just like, they're just really chill, you know, and they weren't coming in hot, like, you know, with all these different things. It was just like, you know, we just talk about it. And again, you know, you never really know what you want exactly until the shot's set up.
Right.
You actually see the environment, you know, you're in the environment with the actors, they're in costume, you got the script. Then as soon as they do the first take, then you're like, okay, I kind of get what we got to do here. And then, you know, I'd suggest things, or they, you know, they'd just be like, what about this? What about that? But sometimes you're under so much time pressure that you're just like, all right, set up, boom, here we go, let's do it. Let's run the takes. And it sounds very clinical, and I don't, you know, but sometimes you just run takes and you're just like, no, faster. Okay, try it again. And they're like, I want to do this. I'm like, sweet, let's go. Yeah. You know, you don't have time. Yeah. You don't really have time to just sit around like and have meetings and be like, right. You know what? You flickered your eyelashes.
But that's really, yeah, exactly. But I think, isn't that really the way it, I mean, this is, I guess, my own opinion, but I mean, I feel that that's kind of the way it should be done, because I think it keeps the purpose, the scene alive.
Yeah.
You know, if you go and you kind of shoot a scene and you go and you have a coffee break and you got to come back, then it's like you have to kind of rehash those emotions again. Whereas if you just put the actors in there, okay, listen, you guys are going to sweat for about an hour.
Yeah,
you know, we're gonna run this for about an hour straight, and we'll take a five after that, you know. And then you kind of, unless it's a really, really long scene, but if it's a 5 to 6 page scene, you want to kind of get that, like in a couple of hours, you know what I mean?
For sure. Well, and here's the thing too, which was Cody. You know, Cody mainly did television. He's on Riverdale, so we're shooting the scene. Again, in the movie, it's a long scene where they're on the floor and they're kind of talking about their childhood.
Talking about the stuff. That's a long scene. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the longest, maybe one of the longest kind of, you know, scenes. I don't know if it's the longest scene in the movie, but it's a long one. I mean, again, we did that. We shot that in probably 3 or 4 hours. And I was like, to me, that's rushed, right? Because, I mean, we only had 3 camera setups. We had the camera up top, and then both their singles. And they're essentially doing monologues. And I'm like, I think we did a good job. We got enough takes. And Cody's like, oh, yeah, I like taking the time with the scene. I'm like, taking the time? I thought we were rushed. I think in TV, you're just like.
Yeah, he's on television. Yeah.
You get 2 takes. You get 3 takes. We're moving on. So in a weird way, in some scenes, you know, just, you know, apparently we had longer than television. But to me, I'd like to have the whole day to do that scene. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And it's also a different style of so many directors. Some of them are like A to B, you know, they know they got it. I think Woody Allen shoots fairly quickly.
He gets
done by 6 p.m. He wants to go watch the game or go home. And then you have other guys that are just like, we're going to be here all night. We're going to get what I'm looking for.
Fincher up in there, you know.
Exactly.
80 takes, delete them, let's start again.
I mean, I heard that like Morgan Freeman, like he comes in and he's like, he's going to give you two takes and you better get what he's got his line. So he's going to,
Yeah, I think it's him and Anthony Hopkins are like, you get Anthony Hopkins. I think is you get three.
Three. Get three. He's more generous. Cause
he's like, I got you. I got you. On yeah. Well, I'm a knight. Isn't he a knight?
We had on Rick Dugdale, who directed Zero Contact with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Oh,
and I was and I was wondering actually we didn't ask this actually we didn't think about it till right now, but it would have been interesting to know how many takes, you know, because you know, because I mean he comes prepared. I mean he's like one of those guys that just you know and Morgan Freeman, you know, he's like, you got two takes.
He's got two. Oh, dang. Yeah, he beat him. He beats
And that's all you're gonna get, you know. Yeah. And the camera's got to be on. And if somebody, God forbid, the light is off.
I think they like to. Also, the thing is, I think they like to say that in interviews.
Yeah, I know. I know. I think so too.
Focuses off, and they'll do another one.
But yeah,
they just don't want to be sitting around.
And they also have stand-ins, so they don't get to the set until everything has been already like tested and shot and all that stuff. So, it's not like they're gonna be standing there under the hot lights, you know. What is your right now where you stand working on this film? Is your next project gonna be another feature?
Straight
it up, comes out tomorrow. What's your next one?
it's changed and then so we actually might be, again, it's not 100%, but we might be doing a Fresno spinoff. So we might we're talking about that, a different style, kind of totally different style film, and not so we're developing that right now, and then
Might be an idea. Awesome. That's cool. Do you work alone generally, or do you have like business partners and work partners that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally my friends, you know, me and Rob Abade, my co-producer. We started grinding out, you know, my first feature whenever that, you know, 7 years ago, and on music video stuff, and we just kind of started our own company, and another friend, Reen, as well, Reen McKinley. We just got, like, literally, we also come from the restaurant world, bartenders and servers. Okay. So I didn't force them into it, but I was like, you're coming to help on this movie, let's do it, like, on the first movie.
Yeah,
you know? And then by that time, then they start, you know, and then Rob Abade stepped up, and then we bought the camera, and we started doing a lot more music videos, and then he's in the world. And then same with my friend Ian, not on this one, but on the next one, I'm collaborating with him. So it's kind of my, you know, my friends, but also business partners.
Yeah. And it's addictive once you get them in, you know?
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. Once they get a taste.
Once they're like, this is fun. And then they see it and they're like, that's awesome. Then suddenly you're like, stop calling me. I don't have it.
He's like, what are we shooting next? I'm like, yo, we need a script.
Let me just get this thing done. go ahead,
Joe. I'm just wondering just as far as film in general, because when we had Rick Dugdale on the show, we talked about the direction of film. And we talked about where we see film going. And he said there was kind of a cultural shift happening. You know, and as a filmmaker yourself, I'm just wondering your thoughts. Like, you know, obviously you have the Marvel movies, you have all those big blockbusters, but he's thinking that he's starting to see a shift back to more of that storytelling, you know, really focusing more on the storytelling, and maybe necessarily those blockbusters. Like, I'm even seeing it, like, I talked a little bit about it. My 15-year-old daughter, you know, when she was younger, she was into Marvel, but now she's shied away from Marvel. Now she'll watch the Riverdales and she'll watch types of things that are more like story focused and almost like a soap opera type thing. She's really into that stuff.
Yeah.
And I ask her, you want to watch a Marvel? She's like, whatever. So I'm just wondering your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I definitely come from, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, 70s cinema and 90s cinema, the grittiness of it. And I wonder if, the thing is, we don't know, but I'm hoping and wondering if there is going to be a swing back into character driven films and a little bit more grit and a little bit more balls, not worrying about the social justice element. And maybe it's happening in foreign language films more, perhaps like South Korea, even they come out, you're like, damn, all right, all right. So I can't say there's not, I wouldn't say there's like a big scene happening right now. Like there, like nothing's popped like in the 90s when it was like the Independence, Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, Kevin Smith, Swingers. And then it's like, oh, Miramax, and you got the freaking Good Will Hunting and all like this. It's just like crazy. And you're like, these are some of the best movies of all time. Then you got Paul Thomas Anderson, Magnolia, you got American Beauty. I don't know. Are we going to get another one? Any of that soon? I don't know. Is TV miniseries are kind of, I kind of, like mini, I just watched Pam and Tommy miniseries.
I haven't seen that yet.
So good.
Really?
It's so good. So, like, really? Sebastian Stan, who plays Tommy Lee, just like murders it. And then Seth Rogen's in it. Oh, it's good. So I don't know. And then I don't know, man. And then, and the thing is, Better Call Saul, I just started watching the final season. I'm like, shit, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's such a high level. So there's stuff out there. I don't, as far as film goes, I don't know. We'll see. What do you guys what do you guys think?
Well, I think what we talked about was, I mean, Netflix and all these they're putting out some high quality programming right now. And they also have the luxury of being able to go 6-7 episodes or 6-7 seasons to tell an actual story. I think also with Scorsese's last thing, The Irishman, you know, it was three and a half hours or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like, it was freaking long. But I actually liked that. I felt really good about it. I didn't feel didn't feel rushed. You know, I felt like you can really explore the characters. And I think that that's happening. I mean, from a having been, I had a film that was in a festival, and you said, you mentioned Korea. One of the films that was on this festival, and it was it was an online thing because of the COVID, but we were watching, and I was watching some of the films, and one of them was from Korea, and it was disturbing, to be honest with you. It was disturbing, but at the end of it, I was like, damn, but that's like really bold, and I'm kind of like almost happy they did that, even though I'm a little bit shaking right now. But you know, I thought that it was a good thing. So I think people are getting tired of this whole social,
the formulaic and the formulaic nature.
Yeah. And Marvel is great. I mean, I'm not going to, Marvel is great at what they do. I have a 5-year-old son, and my daughter even loves them. And so we'll watch Marvel and stuff for the entertainment part of it, you know, but I think for smaller character driven, like your film, you know, I mean, River Road is a perfect example of that.
I hope you guys like it. But we're also trying to entertain. My theory is there's a middle road.
Absolutely.
You know, between, so as you mentioned, you got Marvel, Top Gun, popcorn flicks, right?
Right.
And when they're good, like a Guardians of the Galaxy or the latest Top Gun, they deliver and you're like, fuck yeah. And, but then on the other side, you have your independence and you have your foreign language cinema. And sometimes, again, when they deliver the goods, like a Parasite, even Parasite brought in genre elements to it. Because sometimes, let's be honest, sometimes foreign language films with characters, you know, sometimes, you know,
it's hard.
Perhaps, you know, they don't have story elements. It's more about the characters. Like, I think it was Blue is the Warmest Color. Like, it's dope. Mm-hmm. I loved it. The acting's so good. It's so real. You feel it. But then there's a middle area, which I think is the best spot to be in. And it's a scarier because I think it's riskier. But like Guillermo del Toro, like Pan's Labyrinth, like it's a fantasy genre movie. And then it's a hard drama, like war drama. And the acting's so perfect. And yet, but it brings in the genre elements. And Scorsese plays in that middle area. Do you know what I mean? It's like he has craft, he has style.
Craft. It's stylistic.
Yeah.
It's cinematic. It's adventurous. It's, you know, and it's such a hard middle ground to kind of live in, you know what I mean? Yeah. And if you get there, you know, and River Road gets there, you know.
Hopefully, if you guys agree.
It is entertaining. I mean, you had the characters.
Yeah.
You understood what the characters were. And you had like this really intense, you know, and, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but check it out tomorrow, Apple TV. August 3rd, River Road. Yeah, yeah. We have Rob Wiley is here with us. We're at almost 50 minutes. Wow. This is how
flew by.
Unbelievable. Real quickly, before we let you go, we usually ask our guests this question is, during the last 2 years, obviously a lot of artists, especially musicians, really couldn't work. And, you know, people are starting to get back again into production. What advice or counsel would you give to anyone out there that's kind of still on the fence on what they should do and kind of how they should get back out there again?
Yeah, as far as you're talking about, as far as like musicians and artists trying to get
artists, back. Yeah, just
yeah. And to be honest, I think pandemic or no pandemic, I think it's always a struggle and a grind to kind of decide if
that's you're going
to take on an artistic project, because you get caught up in your you got bills to pay,
right?
You got people, you got relationships. How much time are you going to spend on an artistic project? How much time are you going to spend at work? I mean, really, you just got to go with the love. It sounds super hippie. Go with the love, man. If you love it, just go for it, man. No, but seriously.
No, it's true, though.
You know, you got to, and sometimes you do, I'd say, take the risk is what I'd say.
Yeah.
Take the risk. What's the worst that's going to happen, you know?
That's
whatever, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I always say take the risk, and that's great advice. Thank you for that. So, Rob, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate your time and your insight. We hope that you come back again. We'd love to have you back, and really, maybe we'll even, I don't know, George and I talk about sometimes like getting like a particular genre of film and bringing in a couple of filmmakers, and then just like diving into that. And I'm not one to like, I don't like to like be like, I think that this film was actually quite fascinating. Because I think that it was, you know, I don't want to get into that space, but I want to get into the point of like, why does this work?
Mm-hmm.
And why can't it be duplicated so easily?
Ooh, I like, you're talking my language.
You see what I'm saying? You feel
hit
what I'm
me
saying?
Up. I'm down, man. All I'll right. put on my turtleneck, my glasses, my cigarette, and I'll be like, down. What are you talking about?
Right.
Character, there's
exactly.
no fucking character.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. I love it. I love it. Awesome, man. Thank you so much for being on. Hang tight. We'll be right with you. And thank you, Rob Riley, everyone.
Yes.
Cheers, guys. That was fun.
Thanks, man. Awesome. Wow. Awesome. Rob Riley. He's awesome. He's awesome.
Fantastic conversation. He's got his head
on his shoulders. He knows what he's doing. You know, making a good film. He also is actually talking to classics.
Yes.
You know, when you get a guy in here and, you know, and he's talking about his films and stuff, and he's like, yeah, I really like the Ernie Goes to Hollywood. I don't know. It's some of those, one of those films.
Yeah, but I figure, you
I
know.
I love Porky's too, I think. Was the
there goes the Porky's too thing again. But I would think that, you know, just like musicians study the classic musicians and the classic albums, right? I would figure that, you know, filmmakers would study those classic films, right?
They have to. Yeah, exactly. So awesome. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out. We see you got a few people in there. Thank you. I appreciate y'all very much. That's very nice. We will see you all again next week here on Counterparts, Tuesdays, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. George Batista, John Henry Soto for Counterparts. Thank you very much. We'll see you all next week. And as always,
peace.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.